The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Hello and welcome to What Goes Up, a weekly markets podcast. My name is Mike Regan. I'm a senior editor at Bloomberg.
And I'm Valdana Hayek, a cross-asset reporter with Bloomberg.
And this week on the show, well, the stock market hasn't set a new low in about 5 weeks, and oil is down more than $20 below its peak this year. So is the bear market over? Along with all those concerns about out-of-control inflation and what the Fed will do about it? We'll get into it with the head of investment strategy at the wealth management unit of a big bank. But first, Valdana, I have to say, I've been worried about you. I'm going to just
Why?
Come out and say I've been worried about it. Because I know you live in the
city. That's nice of you, by the way.
Do you have air conditioning?
I have air conditioners, okay. Like in my window.
Okay. All right.
Are then you asking because it's so hot?
Because it's so hot. Now I'm not as worried about you. I feel like you city slickers don't have all the appliances you need to live.
Sometimes we
a
don't.
Comfortable life.
Like everybody probably needs a blender or like a vacuum, you know.
Well, I'm thinking of the big ticket, like
and the big ticket items.
Whenever people hipsters, is it okay to call you a hipster?
Sure.
City slickers. Hear that out in the suburbs I have central air. I've got
a washer dryer. Don't tell me about the washer dryer.
A dishwasher. You're like, what are you, some kind of billionaire with all
this?
Yeah,
with a washer dryer. Like the air conditioning, yes, everybody needs it right now.
At least you have an air conditioner,
but
right.
But the washer dryer, I would love to have a billionaire
out there in the suburbs.
Yeah,
with
you're
my
so
washer
rich.
Dryer.
Oh my God.
And a dishwasher as well.
Yeah. I bet our guest has a dishwasher and a washer dryer. But I do want to introduce Sean Snyder, Head of Investment Strategy at Citi U.S. Wealth Management. Thanks so much for joining us, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, we're all having this debate about whether or not we're in a recession. I know you sent us a note over that said one side will be wrong, which is a very diplomatic way of putting it. So I'm wondering what side you're falling under.
It's really fascinating because you have the potential for two negative real GDP prints in a row. We had a negative print in the first quarter. Atlanta Fed is actually tracking at -1.5% for the second quarter. And most people think that fits the technical definition of a recession, but that's not necessarily true. And we also have the Fed that said in their June FOMC meeting minutes that growth appears to be rebounding in the second quarter. So that's what I meant when I said one side will be wrong. It's interesting that if you look at 2001, we had a recession. We never had two negative prints in a row, and yet it was still defined as a recession. And if you look at the global financial crisis, you actually had the recession called in December 2007. But it wasn't until the fourth quarter of 2008 that you actually had two consecutive quarters. So this notion that two consecutive quarters of negative growth always definition fits isn't exactly right. It's actually kind of winds up better with payrolls. And we've actually seen payrolls coming in, really strong through the first half of this year. Average of 457,000 jobs added in the first half. And that doesn't line up with this notion of recession.
Right. And we've been hearing a lot about the technical definition of a recession. We've talked on the podcast recently about what might constitute a recession by the NBER and by their standards. But so do you think that we should be rethinking our definition of a recession? And if we do, what does it mean for how investors should be thinking about this?
Well, ultimately, it is up to the NBER, right? You have, I believe, eight economists associated with it that make the call, and that often tends to lag the actual recession by about a year. So I'm not sure we can actually, change who the arbiter of that is. What does it mean for investors? I think in general, it means this notion that we're seeing capitulation already, might be wrong. We have seen the market react very fast to the notion of recession simply because the Fed is essentially telling us what it's going to do, right? It wants to destroy demand so that it can bring down inflation. So markets have reacted extremely quickly to the potential for recession. And now they're kind of just waiting to confirm whether or not we will have one or will not have one. Traditionally, if you don't have a recession, these bear markets tend to bottom out somewhere between 20-25%, which is kind of where we are. And if we do have a recession, there's usually another leg down. That's maybe another 5-10% further, depending.
Yeah, Sean, I'm kind of more fascinated with this rebound we've seen off the low. Like I said in the intro, it's been, 5 weeks now. The middle of June was the last low. We're recording here on Wednesday, July 20th. We're something like 8% above that low now. At what point, do you go from saying, oh, this is just a dead cat bounce or a bear market rally to actually being a believer? You mentioned capitulation. Bank of America's fund manager survey was out this week. They said, they think that this is it. They've seen fund manager capitulation. How do you sort of try to suss out whether or not that bottom is the real deal or whether it's a sort of a false bottom and we'll be back there again or lower in the near future?
Well, Les, I think it's interesting because the NASDAQ is up, about 10% since mid-June, I believe June 16th. S&P 500 is up just about 8% since mid-June. It's kind of interesting that it really coincides with these five consecutive weeks of gasoline prices declining. So, I think maybe they're kind of sniffing out that maybe inflation has finally peaked. And, I feel sometimes like I'm the boy who cried wolf because I keep saying inflation has peaked or it's, we're near peak and it just keeps going higher and higher. And you look at Europe, with what's going on there with this heat wave, and then you have potentially even higher food prices and higher energy and more difficult times ahead for them in particular. But I do think there are some signs that maybe inflation has peaked in it. And I think those expectations, we saw the University of Michigan's consumer inflation expectations for 5 years forward come down. Last month, it was revised from 3% to up to 3.3, then back down to 2.8. I was just in the Midwest in Wisconsin, and people there constantly mentioned to me that gas has come back down, and they seem to be a little bit more happy about it. So I think maybe the market's, you know, sniffing that out. And then again, the earnings this season have been, you know, pretty good.
I do want to ask you more about earnings, but first I want to ask you how difficult it's been to make a call on anything right now, considering that the economic signals are a little bit all over the place. So I'm just thinking about, you know, if we were to have a recession, we've never had one where the labor market has been so tight, right?
That's right. You know, so when it comes to making calls in this type of market, you know, I think the first half of this year was extremely difficult for almost anyone because, you know, bonds weren't performing in your portfolio, equities weren't performing in your portfolio, and there was a pretty historic decline in both. The potential upside of the environment now is that fixed income looks more attractive. You know, I think bond yields will likely peak in 2022. And I think if you were to see a recession, well, then the fixed income side of your portfolio at least provides you some sort of buffer. You also have higher yields now. So there are some, you know, attractive opportunities there, U.S. municipals, other areas like that. So I think it's a little bit easier here. It might get a little bit more difficult going forward, though. And I think energy is a particularly interesting sector. It's been one of the, you know, few sectors that has, you know, worked uniformly throughout the majority of this. But if you do see a recession, then you're going to see energy prices come down. If you look at the past four recessions, crude oil prices fell by about 68%. And that's going to mean lower EPS estimates for 2023. That means the energy sector may not work as well as it has. So there's going to be some difficult things if we do have a recession.
Yeah, let's talk about that earnings outlook, Sean. I know, you know, for this year, I think the estimates are still something like 10%, a little bit lower for 2023. Everybody we talk to seems convinced that you can't believe these estimates. They're going to have to come down, whether it be, you know, to your point, the energy sector and that fabulous growth in earnings they're showing comes back to earth, or recession knocks just pretty much, you know, everything out of order. But I also can't help but think, you know, companies tend to beat these estimates, right? You know, so if we're looking at, say, 8-9% growth for next year, even if they come down to, I don't know, 5% or less, say, call 2%, and the market tends to beat those estimates by 5%, how bad of a sort of re-rating in earnings expectations are we talking about to justify what we've seen in this market? It just seems like people have gotten a little carried away to me. Do you think that's possible?
I think what you're describing is a somewhat optimistic scenario, and it's not necessarily because I'm extremely negative, but I think if you did happen to have a recession in the back half of 2023, then that would bring down those estimates. And the current EPS expectations of 8.3% would come down. And even now, if you actually strip out the energy sector, which is doing phenomenal, we're not seeing 10% EPS growth on a broad swath. We're seeing that when you include the energy sector. You strip out the energy sector in the second quarter here, you're actually seeing negative earnings per share. But, you know, companies thus far, and again, maybe it's 10% that have reported the S&P 500 so far this earnings season, have actually shown they've been able to weather it fairly well. They've been able to kind of handle inflation. The profit margins are doing okay. But again, that's not the most difficult scenario. That's not a scenario where unemployment is rising, which is what you would see in 2023. So, you know, we're not there yet.
Can you actually talk more about what you've noticed so far this earnings season? I wanted to ask you if it's the case that maybe the worst case or most feared scenarios aren't actually playing out. And maybe the Netflix report is a good example of this. But, you know, potentially there had been a lot of fear about what we were going to be seeing from companies. And so far, it's not playing out.
I think that's right. And I think what it's reflecting is the macro backdrop. And I think it's actually seeing this play out in real time of whether we're currently in a recession or we're not in a recession. And I think earnings are telling us that we are probably not in a recession yet. So I think that's why they're coming across as a bit more optimistic. But we kind of knew that we may not be in a recession just yet. The consumer has a, you know, really strong balance sheet. Monetary policy operates with a lag, you know, potentially as much as a year or even longer. So I think this is telling us that, yes, they're holding up fine right now. But what happens as the Fed continues to tighten and tighten and tighten? Well, then it's a different story in 2023. And to me, the Federal Reserve kind of reminds me of Aesop's tale about the tortoise and the hare, right? They're reacting like the hare right now. and they're trying to act very, very quickly because they felt like they were behind the curve. But eventually they're going to need to turn into the tortoise and slow things down if they really want to avoid tripping and having this hard landing. And so far they haven't shown any signs of turning from a hare to a tortoise. But I think the market is hoping that that will happen if inflation does indeed peak and comes down.
You know, Sean, I tend to think of the last decade in three parts. I'm sure everyone does. You know, we had the pre-pandemic era, you know, the old normal, where you had growth and tech was, you know, outperforming pretty consistently. Then you had the pandemic where, you know, certain segments of growth and tech just went bananas, went through the roof. Now we have this after, well, maybe the pandemic's not over yet, but we have sort of the over the hump of it, at least, you know, the trying to get back to normal phase of life. And we have seen value, more cyclical companies outperform. And I know you guys at the moment at Citi Global Wealth Investors are overweight a very sort of defensive bucket of stocks, you know, consumer staples, healthcare, dividend growers, commodity hedges like natural resources. You did point out, though, that NASDAQ is outperforming since the low in June again. It's starting to look, you know, maybe like that growth trade is going to come back. That to me seems very much a risk of a head fake, I guess, in this environment. But I'm curious how you're thinking about that resurgence in tech and NASDAQ and growth. You know, is the new normal going to look like a lot like the old normal once we're truly past this pandemic phase of the economy, or is it going to look like something completely different? And how do you sort of suss out when to, you know, go from one side of the boat in defensives or value back into growth and tech? How are you sort of thinking about that transition, if you are at all?
Right. It's difficult to call the exact moment where you should switch from one thing back into another thing. But, you know, when I think of technology, and we've really seen a huge divergence between the technology companies that you and I use on a day-to-day basis, right? You know, there's a handful of names that we probably don't go a single day without using. And then there's also kind of what we call the non-profitable tech that have really been hit during this downturn. And I think that's a big difference. And I'm not sure that the non-profitable tech is really going to see the rebound and come back to where it was in, you know, maybe 2001 or towards the end of 2001. I think that's going to take some time. And, you know, there's simply certain things that we may not need as much anymore. We may not need the fancy, you know, bicycle at home to exercise on because now people are going back to the gym, they're going outside, they're going back to life. You know, those types of things I don't think are going to see that same, you know, surge again. But, you know, at the end of the day, technology is where growth is over the long run. Many of them are much cheaper than they were before. And I think if you have a long enough time horizon, I think, you know, this is probably a good opportunity to add to those decisions. You know, is it going to instantly rebound or, you know, to the moon? Not necessarily. But if you're going to hold it for 10 years, I think you're going to be rewarded.
To the moon, Vildada, Sean spent on Reddit, I think.
Yeah, you've been spending a lot of time on social media.
I remember those meme stocks very well.
It does seem like a really long time ago, though.
I still don't know what diamond hands mean, though.
You'll learn if you spend a lot of time on Reddit.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through.
Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Mike likes to say around here that people tune into this podcast so that they can learn about what smart people like you are actually favoring in this environment. So I do want to ask you to talk a little bit more about those defensive equities that you do like.
Right. So we actually made a few changes recently at Citi's Global Investment Committee, which I'm a voting member of. One thing we did is we brought down our overweight in oil field services down to a neutral. Again, we think maybe there's some risk there if we do indeed enter a recession in 2023. You know, I mentioned that oil prices tend to come down when the economy slows down. So we've trimmed a little bit there. We still have an overweight in natural resources, agriculture, those types of commodities we actually think are probably going to continue to hold up for the most part. And then we like consumer staples, healthcare. Those two sectors are sectors that tend to have positive earnings growth, even if there is a downturn. So they're one of those sectors that kind of helps you weather the storm and act like a bellwether. And then dividend growers, those are, you know, what I would describe as quality companies, really strong balance sheets, consistent dividend growth. And what they do is they tend to outperform the more risky segments of the market, right? So they're probably down maybe a third of what the NASDAQ is down this year, or perhaps even a half. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't checked it recently, but they tend to perform better in these times of kind of difficult backdrop. We do like Chinese equities. We actually added a little bit further there. We think their economy is in a different position than ours is. We think that their economic activity may have bottomed in May and actually is going to potentially start to rebound. So we're just looking for pockets of opportunities. You know, it's a very desynchronized kind of path to the global economy right now. China seems to be coming out of a slowdown. We may be entering further into a slowdown. And then Europe is, you know, anyone's guess, but it doesn't seem great.
Right, right. Especially heading into the fall and winter, I guess, with, you know, so many questions about the gas supplies. I wanted to unpack your thinking on China a little bit, Sean, because I do feel like that's a bit of a contrarian call right now to be, you know, sort of bullish on China. How are you thinking about sort of the regulatory risks? It almost seems like possibly that the pendulum has swung in China where, you know, last year they were cracking down on tech companies and education stocks, and it really spooked a lot of money out of the market.
Does it seem like, you know, Xi Jinping has learned his lesson and is not going to keep that heavy-handed approach to regulation going? And is that at all part of your thinking on why to be bullish China?
You know, I'll be honest, I don't have particularly great insights into the politics there. And I think that is probably the risk you take when you do invest in those equities. But our call is more simply based on the macro backdrop, and that we think that their economy is kind of turning the corner, and that we've seen extremely cheap valuations there. And it's really, you know, if you talk to clients in that region, it really feels like that moment of capitulation where, you know, you feel that frustration and no one wants to come anywhere near it. So I think that kind of sets up for the contrarian call. Is there that idiosyncratic risk of, you know, political issues or maybe things are kind of opaque to outside investors? Yes. But I think for the right person, still makes sense.
What's behind your call that their economy is potentially making a turn for the better? Is it the COVID zero potentially going away or abating or lessening, or however you want to describe it? Or is there something more fundamental at play?
I think it's that the expectations that the credit impulse in the region will pick up. So when you see the credit impulse pick up and stimulus kind of take hold, then generally the economy responds to that. So, you know, we think that their economy is going to continue to pick up steam here. Maybe they don't hit the 5.5% growth target that they want, but we think that economic, you know, activity, particularly GDP, is on the uptrend there. So that's really it.
Yeah, Sean, so much of the story this year has been the Treasury market, this really eye-popping surge in yields earlier in the year. It seems like, knock on wood, I'm probably going to jinx it, but it seems like that volatility in Treasuries is, you know, fingers crossed, calmed down a little bit. Got the 10-year settling in right around 3%. Are bonds attractive at this level, even though we haven't quite seen that inflation come back to earth yet? Is it worth sort of making the gamble that these will be positive yields if you buy further out on the curve right now?
I think that's the case. We've done actually a few kind of experiments or look at historical examples per se. And when you saw both stocks and bonds sell off by over 4.5% during the same period, it tends to set up for a rebound in fixed income. And we've only found five other examples in the past where we had this first half of a period of 6 months where both sold off uniformly and together. And what happened in the following 6 months is that fixed income returns were significantly better and they were positive in all 100% of the cases, whereas stocks was 3 out of 5 cases or less so. So our conviction is stronger on the fixed income side. And we actually think that you're getting to this point now where if you do enter recession again, maybe not quite the base case, but it looks like, you know, increasingly likely in 2023, then bonds will add, you know, some diversification to your portfolio, and Treasury yields probably will come down.
I'm wondering, Sean, if you think there does come a point where bonds might be more attractive than stocks even.
Listen, for a long-term investor, I don't think that's the case. You know, that may be the case for the next year or so. But I mean, ultimately, you know, long-run stock market returns are improving right now. So, and I think we have to remember that even during these really tough periods, that bear markets are almost always followed by really lengthy and substantial bull markets. So after a typical bear market, what you tend to see is that the stock market posts about 106% return over the next period after that bear market, and then it tends to last about 600 or so trading days. So when you think of long-term investing, you really have to keep that in focus and realize that these bear markets are part of investing and that they're often followed by bull markets. So to say that stocks are not going to be as attractive to fixed income, I think is probably wrong. Maybe they might not be the place you want to, like, you know, sink everything into right now. Maybe there's another leg down. But I think over the long run, stocks are still a better investment than fixed income.
Yeah, Sean, we're going to get the next Federal Reserve decision next week. What are your sort of expectations for that? I mean, I think everyone's kind of, you know, expecting a 75 basis point hike. You know, doesn't seem like 100 is necessarily on the table as much as it was maybe a few weeks ago when commodities and everything were still high. Do you think they'll be able to react to this sort of correction in commodities to the downside and get a little more dovish, or are they just going to be pedal to the metal still, at least in their guidance and in their, you know, what Powell has to say in the press conference?
I think they may mention the fact that energy prices have come off a bit. You know, if gasoline prices stay where they are currently, holds through the end of July, then maybe you can shave off 0.3 percentage points off of the CPI in July. But again, we do have prices firming on the services side. Shelter prices continue to rise. Those are things that operate with a lag. So the way the CPI works, the shelter component tends to lag the national Case-Shiller housing index by about a year.
Yeah.
So that means you're going to continue to see that firming in shelter prices. So I don't think they're going to feel confident enough to back off. I personally would like to see them react less to these individual data points. I think that creates kind of unnecessary market volatility. You know, anytime a CPI inflation print comes out, it's like, okay, now it's a jumbo rate hike, or no, it's not. Or look at the University of Michigan's consumer inflation expectation index. It jumped up, the Fed reacted to it, raised their basis point rate from 50 to 75. Then it got revised down to a lower print. So, I'd like to see them kind of just be sort of stable here. Hopefully that's what they do.
Mike, do you want to know a fun fact?
Yes, I like fun facts.
My birthday is next Wednesday.
Oh, how about that?
Fed Day.
Wow.
It's going to be awful.
You should say, that's a good day to take off, I think.
I know, right? I should have taken off. But Sean, can you also talk about what a Fed-induced recession might mean for unemployment? I know in the notes you had sent over, you said it could mean unemployment rising to around 6.5%, and that could mean that stocks could fall another 10% or so. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. That's not an official forecast, but what I did is I looked at past recessions, and what you see is that the unemployment rate doesn't tend to just tick up by a few ticks, right? So we saw or heard Fed Chair Powell in the past mention that they may need to continue tightening until they see the unemployment rate rise by a few ticks, but that doesn't tend to happen. So on average, the unemployment rate when you have a recession tends to rise by about 3%. So, you know, right now we're at 3.6%. You know, I think there is some room between that and what the Fed considers full employment. You know, I think that they're comfortable with the unemployment rate rising. Typically, you know, the natural rate of unemployment is considered to be somewhere around 5 to 5.5%. That's considered to be full employment. So I think they can accept the unemployment rate rising to some extent. But, you know, you're kind of treading into dangerous territory thinking that you can swerve just at the right moment so you don't, you know, as to avoid unnecessary job loss. And at some point, if the Fed does do that, then they have to focus on their other mandate, right? So right now, they can ignore the mandate of full employment because there's such a tight labor market and they can focus on price stability. But what happens when unemployment starts to rise? Then what do they do? Which mandate becomes the most important? And I think eventually it will become the employment mandate. And they may have to just accept a higher rate of inflation.
You know, Sean, in your notes, you mentioned the SAHM recession rule, or SAHM, is it? S-A-H-M? I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but I
believe it's SAHM.
SAHM. We'll go with SAHM. It's interesting. I feel like that's being talked a lot about these days, especially because of this debate about, well, what if we do get two quarters of negative GDP growth? Is that really a recession? People are sort of looking for that alternative indicator of it. And my understanding, it's basically if you take what the moving average of the past 3 months of the unemployment rate, as long as it hasn't risen half a percentage point from the low, the recent low in the past year, then no recession. Is that something you think the Fed keeps an eye on?
Well, it was actually created by Claudia Sahm, who worked at the Fed, so I would imagine they'd at least be aware of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if based on their tone and the things they seem to be saying, they don't seem to think that the U.S. economy is in a recession, so it's possible. You know, what's interesting about the Sahm rule is it actually kind of lines up with leading economic indicators. So leading economic indicators is the other thing I constantly look at to kind of judge whether in a recession or not. Typically, on a year-on-year basis, it falls below 0% before you enter a recession. It's been really quite accurate. The yield curve is part of that. And right now, it's at a positive 3%. I think it will be released again, I think, later this week, and I'm sure it'll come down further. It's been, you know, cooling rapidly, but it isn't signaling a recession. It tends to lead the SAHM rule by about 9 months. So if you kind of line them up together on a chart, it shows that maybe heading into 2023, you'll start to see the unemployment rate rise. and this constant, persistence of job gains will potentially turn into job losses. And I think that will be a moment where the market kind of has to get its head around, and the Fed as well. And I think that's maybe when you see this turning point from the Fed, and then maybe even more so the markets.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And Sean, just to wrap things up here, and you sort of alluded to this, but I want to ask you about your long-term thinking, what you're thinking about for about this around the stock market for the next decade, because I know we had Katie Koch on the podcast a couple of weeks ago from she's from Goldman, and she said the next decade is actually going to be really, really tough for equities. So how are you guys thinking about what the next 10 years are going to look like?
Well, I think when you have a bear market like this, I think returns and the strategic returns over the next 10-year period certainly improve. I think for a long-term investor, I don't think this matters that much. I think that you will see a relatively strong bull market coming out of this. I think timing the market doesn't tend to work very well. I think when you do that, since 1990, if you simply missed, the best 20 days, your average return, annual return goes from 10.8% down to 6.3%. And, 8 of those 10 worst days are right next to the 10 best days. So it's really difficult to market time. So, but I really think it's important to stay focused on the long term. And, you know, if you simply looked at hypothetical performance of, say, a $10,000 investment since 1990, it's been quite impressive. You know, we've made it through Brexit. We've made it through the global financial crisis. We've made it through the annexation of Crimea in the past. We've made it through a lot of difficult times. And I think that will absolutely be the case this time around as well. So I would be, you know, I started at Citigroup during the global financial crisis. I remember March 9, 2009, when nobody wanted to touch anything. And that was an extremely attractive entry point. So I think this will likely prove to be that again. Are we at that point just yet? Maybe not, but we will get there.
All right. Well, you know what point we're at, Phil Dodden?
I wonder if Sean knows.
I think he figured it out.
Is it the craziest thing?
It's, yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
Sean's bet on this show before. He knows the rules. I've got a good one.
I think I do too, but mine is kind of gross.
Yeah, all right. I like it already. Okay. I like it already. Let's hear it.
Okay. This is about a Family Dollar in Arkansas. A few months ago,
I know where you're going.
They had to fumigate the entire place because there was a huge rodent problem. And when they came back, guess how many dead rodent carcasses they found?
Oh, this is at one store or is that a warehouse?
It was a warehouse.
All right. How many? Boy, the
Oh, I think it was a warehouse. Yeah.
How many dead rodents in one Dollar Club warehouse?
Family Dollar.
Family Dollar, sorry, Dollar Club.
What is Dollar Club even?
I just made that up.
Where do you live?
Oh, I'm thinking of the Dollar Shave Club. Sean, what's your guess on how many dead rodents were found?
Oh, man, that's tough. I'm going to go over 500.
500?
I'm guessing they come in bulk there.
Jeez.
That's good.
It's not a Costco. If it was Costco.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to take the under. I'm going to go 250.
Well, I obviously don't have a good poker face because I just did a really shocked face at you, but no. 1,000.
1,000 dead rodents. Jeez.
Dead rodent carcasses.
Well, that's due to inflation, I think.
And now the rats are actually back. So all these workers are finding them. I guess the story that I read said they found them in rolled up rugs and in different items. And the warehouse is closed.
1,000 dead rodents. Sean, I think I saw them play at CBGB's in the 90s. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. I think she wins.
That's pretty good.
I'm calling it early.
That's pretty good. All right, Sean, how about you? You see anything crazy this week?
Yeah, I was actually going to go with the heat wave. And then I actually do think there is maybe some financial market implications. So I was reading about the heat wave, particularly in Europe. You know, only 5 to 10% of European households have air conditioning, which sounds absolutely miserable. But so they ended up having, there's something called durum wheat, which is a component used for pasta, and they had to harvest it 2 weeks early, and they yielded 30% less than normal. So as a result, we might see pasta prices go up.
Oh, no.
Which is a very big downside.
Yeah.
And that's really tough. And another interesting thing is actually air conditioning stocks are up about 10% in the last 5 days.
I was going to say.
So there is always a bull market somewhere.
It'd be good to be a traveling air conditioner salesman in London in London these days.
For sure.
But I read that story about the wheat, too. And I got to say, this whole food crisis thing, I feel like, is going to just become a bigger and bigger issue going forward. I'm kind of worried about that. But we'll have to keep an eye on that. All right. Both are very good. I might give you your first win, Vildana.
Really?
Yeah.
My first one ever?
I think that's your first one. I don't know. Is it?
Isn't that embarrassing?
Yeah. It is for you.
For
it's
me.
Very much for you. Not so much for me.
Not for you, yeah, obviously. But,
all right, Vildana, have you ever purchased a big ticket item without telling your husband?
No.
You can confess on the show.
Like
I don't think he
fridge?
Listens. Any big,
a car?
Big purchase. Diamonds. A car?
No.
Nothing?
Expensive handbag? Nothing?
No. No shoes? Sean, you ever buy a big, I don't even know if you're in a relationship, so I don't know, but if...
I am indeed married. Have I ever just went out and bought something on my own, extremely expensive? I'm going to go with, I probably, no, I don't
like
think
a,
I
like
have.
Like a Fang stock, perhaps? all right, what if I were to tell you there was a woman in Scotland who bought a castle
Ooh. Without telling her husband, an actual 17th century castle.
Wow.
She impulse purchased it. Not a very nice castle, but it is on a lot of land, about 4.5 acres outside of Glasgow. It's from the 17th century. It was the Bishop of Glasgow's residence at one point, and it's a mess. It's very, very much derelict, as the Daily Mail describes it in their story. Because you think of a Scottish castle as being all stone and just wood floors, but this had either drywall or plaster walls at some point. Everything's fallen apart. It's a total mess. Several million pounds to renovate it. But Vildana, what do you think the selling price was for this derelict, quote unquote, Scottish castle?
I think these things are cheaper than you would think. You think castle, you think like princes and princesses, right, etc. I'm going to go with like £450,000.
£450,000. Show, what do you want, the over or under on that?
I'm going to go under.
Yeah. Yeah. The under is right. £250,000.
Oh, no. I almost went with 250.
Wow. For a derelict Scottish castle. It's pretty amazing. It is a dump, though. It really needs a lot of work. But she's one of these women who's like buys old houses and fixes them up and turns
without
them
telling her husband?
Airbnbs. I think the rest of them she told her husband about.
Is she American? Is she benefiting from the euro-dollar parity?
She's not, but her investment thesis is that Americans love castles.
Yes.
And I think she's right about that. I went to Scotland one time, and we saw a lot of castles. We saw the Monty Python Holy Grail Castle. That was pretty good. So she wants to turn it into a wedding hall and lure Americans over to get married.
It's not a bad idea.
That's not a bad idea.
Sign me up.
£250,000.
European travel's cheap right now.
Yeah.
For American.
Yeah.
I can't believe I almost went with 250, and I didn't.
Yeah, you were in the ballpark, though. I will.
Don't beat yourself up about it. You still won.
Yeah.
That's true. Thank you.
Yeah. And I lost on the 1,000 dead rodents.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty embarrassing. I need to read up more on that.
I really got you on that.
On how many dead rodents can you fit in a dollar store?
How gross.
I think we've grossed out all the listeners enough for one week, Vildana. Sean, always a pleasure to hear your thoughts, what's going on at City U.S. Wealth Management, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Reganonymous. Vildana Heirich is at Vildana Heirich. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Stacey Wong. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard. Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.